Welcome everyone to another episode here at the Damage Report. If you're watching live, then you just saw the intro animation to our show, which I set up as something that I could change over time. You know, with like changing news and little bits of video, and then I forgot how. So it's been the same for a long time. What you didn't see, but probably should have seen, was my guest dancing like a madman to it. They really should have cut to him. Jason Carter.
Yeah. Welcome back. John, thank you for having me. One, two, they absolutely should have cut to me. I was boom, 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 boom,
boom. To the beat.
See?
It was choreographed like an Usher dance from an early 2000s teen movie, but it was very good.
Thank you. And I want to apologize right now for the Drag Race season one filter that's over my face. Something's wrong with my computer and the internet was out in my apartment. So I'm in a luxurious office complex with no air conditioning, making sure I'm here for you guys, the TYT Army. So there's my disclaimer, no judgment in the comments, okay?
We appreciate that. Look, forever is in his Twitter handle and forever he will be here, even if all he has is a webcam to do so. So welcome back. Very glad to have you here, especially because we've got a lot of news. We've got updates on the various challenges going on to the election results in a few different states. We've got Lindsey Graham doing his best to be thrown in jail before Biden becomes president. That's gonna be fun. Maybe we'll go to war with Iran. That's cool. And Thanksgiving, a time to get together and share some stuffing and mashed potatoes and a fatal disease. That's according to doctors far smarter than me. So everybody's already watching. Thank you for joining us, whether you're on YouTube or on the app or on the website or on Twitch or everywhere else. I don't know all of the places, but do whatever it is that they want you to do, like liking or there's a bell or something. Share the stream, let people know that we're live. And if you send us messages, Jason and I will be responding as we go. Before we launch into it though, Jason, anything we need to address, anything we need to get to, or should we start this thing off?
No, nothing. I have my Coke Zero. So I stopped drinking the Monsters. Remember last time I had a Monster? I stopped drinking the Monsters, mm-hmm. Not the Coke Zero, because it's supposed to be healthier for you. Oh, which flavor is that?
This is ultraviolet.
It sounds ultra. However, I'm sure it's delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they named it almost as if it was radioactive, so that's great. I haven't been doing a lot, but they're still good. But I like your Coke Zero. Also, I guess it's a little bit later in the day where you're at.
Yeah, it's almost what, 1 o'clock here. But hey, we do what we gotta do to get it together. Let's go on to the news.
Let's do it. Okay, everybody, let's launch into this thing. See, take stock with what's left of America. Donald Trump has multiple lawsuits going on around the country challenging the results of various state counts. Well, if you ask him, he says they're not his lawsuits, they're other people's lawsuits, even though they're his and they're tied to his campaign. It's weird, I don't know what it means, but I do know what some of the developments mean, and they're not good news for the president. Three attorneys representing President Trump's campaign withdrew from a lawsuit challenging the election results in Pennsylvania just yesterday. The motion came the evening before a hearing scheduled in the case, which was filed 1 week ago. So like the judge has to actually allow it for them to pull out, especially like the day before a hearing. But imagine that you file and then 1 week, one week later, you're just like, let me out of here. I have got to go. Because why? We've seen what happens when those hearings actually happen, and they usually result in transcripts that make the lawyers look like idiots. And so I don't know. I don't know if that's what's gonna happen, but maybe tomorrow we'll find out with whatever is left of his legal team. And we're gonna have developments on, you know, who's being added to it. But people are apparently pulling the cord on their parachute, Jason.
As they should. This whole president temper tantrum about him wanting a recount, about the validity of the election, is like the best episode of House of Cards. The innuendo, just everything that's happening is so dramatic. You can't write this stuff, but John, it makes complete and total sense for his team, who are smart attorneys. These are like legal eagles, if you will, to realize that there is no base for this fight that the president wants to have happen. It makes no sense. Even someone who is not legally inclined, doesn't have a doctorate of jurisprudence, and isn't you know of that world, can really see just by following the news that this and being present in what's happened with the election and what's happening with politics in our country, knows that Trump, you lost, bro. I'm sorry. That's all there is to it. And common sense will tell you that trying to, what's the word? Finagle your way into the White House now isn't a good look. And it's probably out of everything in his 4 years that he's done that has been a bad look, this is the baddest of all the looks, if that makes sense.
Maybe the most pathetic, I think. And the thing is, like,
most pathetic. I yes, John. Thank you for getting me together on that. Absolutely, because he's done worse shit. I'm sorry, he's done worse things. But yes, for sure.
Yeah, he's done terrible stuff, swearing and everything. But anyway, and the thing is, like, he can say, okay, we've got all these lawyers that we've pre-selected that we're gonna try to get to go around the country and do various things. And he can pay them hypothetically, although apparently not enough to keep them on more than a week or so. But he's not the one who has to go before a judge and try to make this case. He's not the one that has to figure out exactly words they could say and not say to make it seem like there's something up so that Fox can talk about it and pretend that there's something to this, but not lie in a demonstrable way that could result in their, you know, like accreditation being stripped away. So they're the ones who are potentially risking something here, not really Donald Trump. Donald Trump has already lost. It's up to the lawyers to decide, do you want to potentially lose the equivalent of your election effectively? Yeah. And apparently some don't.
And right, and John, they shouldn't though. I mean, in all seriousness, this is just unnecessary. This is the most unnecessary waste of people's time, of the media's time, of the American public's time. When, you know, this election has been, for some, an emotional thing, right? 2020 has been emotional one, and I keep using this word traumatic. And then the anxiety that people had leading up to the election, then the day of the election, going out to vote, et cetera, now to drag this on is just like, it's pouring salt into a wound that won't heal, that really wants to heal. So I don't blame these attorneys for being smart and saying this, you know what? Maybe 4 years ago, 2 years ago, sure, we may have wanted to play ball. Now we're choosing to sit this one out because self-preservation is of the utmost, is paramount, is of the utmost importance.
Yeah. Well, there are other lawyers that are trying to preserve themselves. Last Thursday, the law firm Porter, Wright, Morris, and Arthur also moved to withdraw from the same case in Pennsylvania. Which, that's again, these are not big votes of confidence from these law firms that they're all trying to leave. And then a new group is brought in, and then they decide to leave, and then. What does that leave you with? What that leaves you with is sort of scraping the bottom of the legal barrel. And they're doing that in two different forms. Both are funny. The second one's gonna be funnier, so stick around. But first, who do they have? Well, they have one lawyer, Mark Scaringi, who had said, by the way, on their program, they host like a podcast on iHeartRadio, back on November 7th said, at the end of the day, in my view, the litigation will not work. It will not reverse this election, which is an amazing position for that host of the show to take. And then to become a lawyer on that, because Scaringi is playing a key role in that litigation, representing the Trump campaign in Pennsylvania now. So from November 7th saying, nah, man, this isn't gonna reverse anything, to, oh, you're paying me? Oh, okay, well then let's reverse this thing.
Right.
Well, now, But really fast, Jason, I wouldn't necessarily get your hopes up for much to come out of this, even with Scaringi now playing a part, considering that Scaringi also said, in my opinion, there really are no bombshells that are about to drop that will derail the Biden presidency, including these lawsuits, which I look forward to earning money in pursuing.
Hey, take care of number one, right? Sure, fine. You want some, look, some people, money is all that matters. If the Trump administration is willing to throw hundreds of thousands of dollars at someone to try to, for them to do their job to try to win this, and the guy's like, I'll take the money, but I know in my heart of hearts, in my soul, that you're not going to win this, fine, I'll play along.
Yeah.
But I think, John, I think it's very interesting though, when you have also conservative outlets that are like, President, it's time, 45, it's time for a concession. Like, now you just look ridiculous. Now you're like, all the memes about him whining with like, a pacifier in his mouth, being spanked by his mom, being a bad boy.
I didn't see that.
There's so many. It's his legacy.
You going to?
And porn up. Just his legacy is being marred by this behavior, where he could have just left quietly and tried to hold on to some kind of legacy with the presidency. He can't even go back to reality TV now, which I'm pretty sure he's going to try to do, or have his own network. But you know, it's for someone as proud as Donald Trump is, I would I would imagine he'd want to retain some kind of dignity. And what he's doing now, trying to win this deal without a concession, is throwing that out the window faster than, I don't know, like a fart in the wind.
Yeah, which is pretty fast, admittedly. Especially in those gale force winds they get in Miami. Anyway, one other thing. So the whole Scaringe thing is pretty funny. And by the way, I'm sure that this lawyer, assuming that he doesn't like back out from the case in like 2 days, like all the rest are, he'll be on Fox News, you know, and he'll be pretending that there's something to it, and they'll ignore the comments he made before because now he's with Trump, which means you're good. If you ever turn on Trump, it means you're bad. It doesn't matter what the facts are. He didn't immediately respond to a request for comment from the Post, so maybe there's something that changed his thinking before he, you know, launched into this case. Probably the paycheck, but we don't know because he's not saying. But it gets a little bit funnier even than that, although we have to sort of catch up to the current day. Okay. And this is going to get to what the name of the live stream is. Donald Trump is not a smart guy, which isn't necessarily the worst thing. Plenty of people aren't that smart. But you have to know who to trust, who to listen to, and he's also really bad at doing that. So I want to show you a little bit of this little interaction that happened on CNN, a reporter talking about how there was a bit of a circular firing squad and a shakeup inside the Trump circle in the immediate aftermath of the election. So take a look at this.
I learned that last week the president was upset when he found out his campaign was dropping the Arizona lawsuit. So he summoned officials to the Oval Office and campaign officials and lawyers. Rudy Giuliani was on the phone, and I'm told by multiple sources it became very contentious, with Rudy Giuliani accusing the Trump campaign lawyers of lying to the president, even though they had been telling him the truth, that the odds were stacked against him, that he likely would not be able to change the outcome of the election. Rudy called them liars. In response, the deputy campaign manager Justin Clark fired back at him and called him an effing a-hole. This was all unfolding in the Oval Office with the president, the vice president. The next day, Rudy Giuliani was put in charge by President Trump. So he went up, and the Trump campaign lawyers descended, essentially, as it was put to me. And Rudy's strategy here is essentially to go guns a-blazing, fight till the bitter end, and to focus on conspiracy theories. Rudy has been in the president's ear pushing these conspiracy theories about election software made by the company Dominion and allegedly changing votes. There is no evidence to support this. Dominion's come out to refute it. US government officials have come out to refute it. There have been no cases filed, no evidence shown. But that is really where Rudy's focus is. And I'm told by sources that he's really been pushing that with Trump and making him think that there is a chance if he pushes, you know, with these legal cases.
Okay, so they all lost it in the Oval Office. Go back, everybody, to a week or two ago when Brett Ehrlich and I actually sort of scripted out how it went down in the Oval Office. Turns out we weren't all that off. And this fighting between all of them, the different representatives of different groups of the White House and the Trump campaign, resulted apparently in Trump choosing Giuliani to help coordinate all of this, to be his guy who is gonna secure his second term, which is admittedly a bad idea. And just a couple of days later, it resulted in that Four Seasons total landscaping debacle, one of the funniest things to happen in quite a while. But there is a development. We're gonna turn to it in just 1 second. But Jason, I'm curious about, I mean, you've been watching since the election. Rudy has been basically in charge of coordinating all of this, and he is one of the most unstable individuals, I think, in our country right now.
I mean, nail on the head, John, unstable. I mean, that's a nice way of putting it. That's you being kind today on a Tuesday. John, it goes back to what I've been saying. Okay, so now people are in Trump's ear, mainly Giuliani, saying conspiracy theories. That The US government is saying there's no basis for these claims. The software people are saying there's no basis for these claims. Myriad different sources that have an attachment, a validity to the election and the election process are saying this is not what happened. Here are the facts. But yet Giuliani, in his unstable mind, is saying, okay, well, look, we have no way to combat this. Let's go with conspiracy theories. Get the F out of here. Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know what more to say about this, John, than what I've said already. It's almost upsetting, offensive, but pretty comical. It's pretty funny, actually, now. Now, the longer it drags on, the many days and the many weeks it drags on, it's almost becoming a joke. Where are we? Where else can we go? Where else can we go? Like, he lost.
You know where we can go? Where we can go? Rudy Giuliani, who for the past 2 weeks has been sort of coordinating this whole thing, is now assuming direct control. And according to a petition he submitted to the court in Pennsylvania, I, Rudolph William Giuliani, hereby petition the United States District Court for the Middle District of Pennsylvania to admit me to practice before that court. He is going to be arguing their case in court. And according to Zoe Tillerman, the last time he entered an appearance in federal court was 1992. When he was admittedly a little bit more put together mentally, emotionally, and in terms of blood alcohol content, he is going to be, how many transcripts have we seen over the past few weeks of them having to admit that they have nothing, or the judge saying, then what's your problem? All those things. That was with lawyers who hypothetically were sane and sober. Mm-hmm. Rudy Giuliani, nobody can predict what's gonna happen when he starts talking and a stenographer is there to track every word. It is gonna be crazy.
It's gonna be crazy. And again, people are so much more aware, they're so much more involved, and they're so much more present in this election, I think now more than any election in the past. And they're not buying it. They're not buying it. Even people from his base, Trump's base, who I always found to be hyper loyal, super vigilant mm-hmm. the president, are like, wait, hold on, okay, no, bro, like, you might want to sit this one out, dude. It's okay, maybe in 2024, if you're still around, then fine. But yeah, so you know, on a positive note, we wish Giuliani the best.
You feel free for yourself. Speak for yourself, buddy. But anyway, no, he's a terrible guy. He's really, really bad. I did like his appearance in the Borat subsequent movie film. That was good. He's a good actor, but other than that, no, I'm not a fan of him. What is the plan? Because he's out of it, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have some sort of plan. So they are challenging in court some counties allowing voters to cure deficient ballots while others did not. Of course, other counties hypothetically could have, apparently chose not to, because remember, Republicans don't care if people vote or not. Democrats want people to vote. And these are ballots that had some sort of technical error, but were submitted on time. And someone comes in and confirms the information. There's no rational argument for why those votes shouldn't be counted. They're not people that are being made up. They're not dead. It's just they need to fix their signature or something like that. The only reason they don't want them to be counted is because they think that it might help Trump. Bear in mind, though, even if every single one of those ballots that needs to be cured and might be, or already has been cured, even if all of them were invalidated, that would not let Donald Trump win Pennsylvania. And even if it did, winning Pennsylvania wouldn't let Trump win the election. All of this is a stupid joke with no punchline, but it is leading somewhere. And it's leading to the place that we've been sort of expecting for literally weeks now. Rudy Giuliani, who I guess is predicting he'll lose this lawsuit, which is a good bet because he's gonna, says that losing election lawsuits is part of our plan to get it to the Supreme Court. And they apparently believe that they don't need to win over the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court. They just need to get it to the Supreme Court to, I don't know, invalidate those votes, which again, wouldn't actually give them the state, let alone the Electoral College. I don't know, but I'm not a lawyer. He barely is. I don't know what's gonna happen here.
Punchline, joke, end game. Okay, so people that sit in the Supreme Court, they're not watching TV. They don't know what's going on. They're not hearing what's happening in the world and what's happening in this election. They're like those cogs in a Minority Report. They just float around in water the same thing. Good luck to Rudy Giuliani, because John, there is no way that people. So I had a conversation with my husband about what if Trump magically wins the election? Okay, listen, in an alternate universe, what happens if, you know, they take it up to the top and Trump wins? The amount of protest and violence and just the way our country will be overturned by this is what Cenk would say unconscionable, right? And I don't think Supreme Court wants that. One, two, I don't think it's gonna happen. And three, Trump, his concession is going to have to come sooner than later. And January 20th is going to roll around a lot quicker. I mean, it's going to be here before you know it. What happens then? You know, the Supreme Court's not happy, but those are some of the smartest individuals in the land, the highest court in the land, the smartest individuals in the land. They know what's up. So Gian has a fight, and if I was him, he has more yesterdays than tomorrows. I would be spending that time trying to be happy in your life for the remaining days that you have. I know that sounds very ominous and kind of bleak, but hey, it's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, maybe try to patch things up with your family. You know, his daughter is going around writing op-eds about how he's lost his mind. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess everybody gets to choose how they use their days. He's choosing poorly.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
What in the hell has been going on with Lindsey Graham? He apparently is so devoted to the idea of proving that electoral fraud has happened that he's just doing it as a demonstration. He apparently has been pressuring the Secretary of State of Georgia to find some way to throw out legal ballots. And so now that that has come out, and that is according to that Secretary of State, we're having this big back and forth about exactly what he said and to who. And so we're going to try to walk through it and figure out what he actually did, how unethical it might be, and whether indeed it might cross some sort of legal lines. So this started off with the Georgia Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, who gave an interview to the Washington Post saying that the Republican senator had asked him on Friday if Raffensperger could toss out all the mail-in ballots in counties with higher rates of signature matching issues, which obviously you cannot do. Raffensperger, who is a Republican, bear in mind, told the Post that it was clear to him that Graham was suggesting he find a way to throw out ballots. Quote, "It sure looked like he was wanting to go down that road." After Graham's response came out, and we're going to play some of that for you, he stood by his assertion saying the implication is look hard and see how many ballots you can throw. And remember, and this is important because Trump has tried to confuse people about this, both the governor and the Secretary of State of Georgia are Republicans. He keeps saying that they're Democrats, they're not. So this effectively kind of a whistleblower here is a Republican who just doesn't want to throw away legal ballots. So we're going to have more on this, including Graham's interpretation of what he said to Raffensperger. But so far, Jason, what do you think?
The theme of today's damage report has been Republicans, lawyers, self-preservation, house of cards, reading between the lines. And right, the Republican whistleblower is also like, bro, no, I'm not doing this. Reading between the lines means that, sure, Lindsey Graham's not saying point flat out, dude, can you possibly throw out these ballots? But he's alluding, the innuendo is there. And I'm glad this person's calling him out. Back to what I said earlier, John, people are not messing around with this election on both sides, right? And on the side that should be supporting Trump, they're tired as well. So for this person to tell CNN and mainstream media that I think that he was trying to ask me to throw out the ballots is one, not grabbing Lindsey Graham and doing one of those like Street Fighter Hadouken, Ryu under the bus thing. you know, when you play the games where they like have those superpowers?
Oh, I do.
And it's saying like, I'm gonna that they want what's right to be done. They want for this election to, one, be over, and two, they don't want to get their hands dirty because it's not worth it, because they don't have anything invested in doing that. So I'm glad that this person said, skirt, nope, that's not what we're doing today, brother. Sorry, heart left, exit stage left.
Yeah. Well, this is a Republican. I guess they'd go on the right. But yeah. And so what actually happened? So let's go to Graham. Here he is denying that there was anything wrong with that conversation that Raffensperger referenced.
I think that's just ridiculous. If he feels threatened by that conversation, he's got a problem. I actually thought it was a good conversation.
He suggested, according to the Washington Post, that he was surprised when you asked him if he has any power to throw out all mail-in ballots.
I never said that. I said, do you have power as Secretary of State to require bipartisan verification of a signature? Mm-hmm. Because right now they don't.
Okay, John. So what do you know? It was a perfect call. No problem with the call. The interesting thing is that apparently, according to Raffensperger, the conversation where Lindsey Graham allegedly said that they should get rid of all the ballots, Raffensperger had staffers on the call with him. So what I'm wondering is, are we going to get some sort of confirmation? Like, supposedly there were multiple witnesses to Lindsey Graham saying this, a multiple, I would assume, Republican witnesses to him saying this. We don't know for sure that they would necessarily approach electoral fraud in the same way as their boss would, but hypothetically there were other people who could speak to this. And what's interesting too is, we don't have a graphic for this, but apparently according to Raffensperger, in the initial reporting, Graham called, they had a conversation, and then at some point after an initial conversation, Graham called back again, and at that point brought up the idea of invalidating absentee ballots. So what's curious about that is, it wasn't brought up in the first call. Did he talk to someone between the first and the second call? Who gave him this idea that Raffensperger should be pressured to get rid of these ballots?
Right, again,
I don't know, we don't know.
House of cards, yo. It's like episode, season two, episode three. I would love to see if there is a more of like a phone call or something else, or someone comes forward, another whistleblower, to corroborate these claims. Because again, the person that he was asking, the Raffensperger, is a smart man. Obviously, he has no reason to lie. Like, what?
No reason to lie specifically about Lindsey Graham, anyway.
Right, and so and also in regards to him asking. Again, reading between the lines, John, that's Lindsey Graham. So there's probably someone sent down to Lindsey Graham and say, no, you got to go and try harder. Don't take no for an answer. You know, like you need to figure this out immediately. And so Lindsey Graham probably felt the fire under his butt and said, okay, well, let me just go for the jugular with this, right? And that's probably what set off Raffensperger. But I think it's ballsy for Lindsey Graham to even do that. I mean, gotta give him points for going home or going hard or going home.
Yeah. And look, just me in my mind filling in the gaps, like Lindsey Graham has ultimate loyalty to Donald Trump. Is it impossible that that was the person Lindsey Graham talked to? I don't know, we'll never know.
Like I said, someone said, you need to go back and make this happen, or I'll end you, essentially.
Yeah, maybe it was Rudy Giuliani, honestly. I mean, he's in charge of this thing, I don't know. What I do know is Lindsey Graham is apparently lying about other parts of this. We can't confirm yet whether that was what was said with Raffensperger. Maybe the aides will at some point come out and say. But Lindsey Graham also told a group of reporters, this is earlier today, I believe, that he had spoken to the secretaries of state in Nevada and Arizona as well, not just in Georgia. So he's sort of pitching that as, it's not that I called up Georgia and I have this very particular plot for Georgia. That's not true. I'm just curious about the election everywhere. But Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, one of those Secretary of State that supposedly he had a conversation with, said that she hasn't spoken with Lindsey Graham. So why is he making up conversations with the Secretaries of State of other states as a way to defend himself with the conversation he had with the Secretary of State of Georgia? If we're as outsiders, and we're trying to decide who is likely to have been telling the truth and who is not, it's probably not the person who's lying about other conversations.
Right.
At least at this point.
Point blank period. I mean, and it's been, again, Katie Hobbs, perfect example of someone who's not wanting to play the game. Who's like, no, you're not gonna drag me into this, man. Quoting a young, talented, unknown singer named Taylor Swift, I want to exclude my itself from this narrative. That's what Katie Hobbs is doing. That's what all these people are doing that should, that historically would have supported Donald Trump, and they're not here for it, John. This is funny. Wow. Lindsey Graham, you know what? People just never cease to amaze me. The amount of ineptitude that exists in some people is just otherworldly.
It never ceases to amaze me that you can somehow make references about Street Fighter and Taylor Swift in a story about electoral fraud. But I like it. In any event, this could end up being, in theory, trouble for Lindsey Graham. I just mean, when I say that, in terms of the strict letter of the law. Now, he has the benefit that he is a powerful, well-connected person who doesn't have to abide by the strict letter of the law. But in theory, if we skip to the last graphic, Georgia law code 21-2-604 from 2016 provides that someone who solicits someone else to commit election fraud is committing a criminal offense in one of potentially a couple different varieties. So is breaking the law. If you try to get someone in a position to do so, and the Secretary of State certainly is in a position in theory to try to invalidate votes, whether they legally can or not. If you try to get them to do something that is electoral fraud, you have committed a crime as well. The issue is that Lindsey Graham is a senator. They get to break the law if they want to, apparently. So I doubt that anything is actually going to end up happening from this. But I know that, at least as of today, a lot of people are asking questions, putting a lot of pressure for some sort of investigation into what Lindsey Graham actually did. I just wouldn't have too much of an expectation that much is going to come of it.
I would agree. And you know, good for, and they should be. No one is above the law. No, people are above the law. They claim to be above the law. I mean, the watchdogs are watching now more than ever, I would think. And Lindsey Graham needs, if you're going to do dirt, be slicker about doing your dirt. And what Lindsey Graham did was just sloppy. This is sloppy. And now there's paper trail of it too. You know, it's the internet, social media. Again, the watchdogs are out and they're looking for anything and everything to take this current administration down. So good luck to all of them, because I don't know. I don't know how this is going to end, but I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. Well, Rudy Giuliani's on the case, so there's a good chance that's how it's going to go. Okay, with that, why don't we roll right on to a little bit of other news, definitely of the it might get worse before it gets better variety. But I think we've got our C block first, unless I'm reading this wrong. Nice. It's easy to look back over 2020 and think it has just been about the pandemic. I mean, that's what this year has been. But it's easy to miss in there that you remember, like, before the pandemic, Trump got impeached this year. And before that, we almost went to war with Iran. That was this year. I know it seems like forever ago, but Donald Trump brought us to the brink of armed conflict with Iran. And the issue is that we've still got a couple more months of him being president. And you know, we narrowly avoided at the beginning of 2020. At the end of 2020, we might not be so lucky. Because according to the New York Times, President Trump asked senior advisors in an Oval Office meeting on Thursday whether he had options to take action against Iran's main nuclear site in the coming weeks. The meeting occurred a day after international inspectors reported a significant increase in the country's stockpile of nuclear material, according to four current and former US officials. Talking with the New York Times just yesterday. Now, when he brought up the possibility of some sort of military action against this nuclear facility, a range of senior advisors dissuaded the president from moving ahead with a military strike. So I guess at least some limited credit to Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, Christopher Miller, Mark Milley for apparently telling him that no, bombing this facility would be a bad thing and might result in bad things. But what we have is a situation where he sees that they're increasing their nuclear stockpile and he gets that he's still the president. And in the background of all of that, he's really mad that he just lost and he's probably still on steroids from his COVID. And he is in a position where if he wanted to launch military action against Iran, he can still do that. He has the power, he legally even can still do that. And so these last couple of months before Biden becomes president could be exciting when it comes to US-Iran relations.
Which is dangerous and scary to even think about that, because I mean, earlier this year, I think we, you know, the US murdered a high ranking Iranian official and fired back.
Absolutely.
And not killing any Americans, but still, they're not if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't start no mess, don't be no mess. And Iran's the type of country that's like, okay, you start this, we're gonna finish it, right? And you know, the treaty and the accord that we had with Iran per Obama, everything's great. Cool. We're all chill. We're, you know, you stay on your side of the pond, we stay on our side of the pond. But to your point, John, Trump feels like he has to show America or show whoever that he still has some kind of juice. So who are we gonna pick on? Let's pick Iran, who is like, you don't want to fight with me. You don't want this heat, because they will come and rain terror on our country for no apparent reason. And mm-hmm. Trump's all about, you know, Americans and the American dream and the American people. Well, putting millions of people in danger by a nuclear event isn't, you know, you making good on your promise to protect the American citizens. Regardless of how you feel about the election, you still have 90 days in office. Your job as commander in chief is to put the country first. And by going to war or antagonizing or instigating something with Iran, does it lean on you doing that?
Yeah, and I fear, like, he is a very simple-minded person, relatively predictable in some psychological responses to things, but also a wild card in that who he talks to can have a big effect on what he does. He mm-hmm. is probably feeling very angry and rejected and powerless, and he's scared of the future. Immature, emotional, wild people don't necessarily respond well to that. And so I worry that he could go out of 2020 the way he entered into it, wanting some sort of fight to prove that he's a big man or whatever. And that is scary. That is very scary. Now, in terms of the actual situation, the International Atomic Energy Agency did report last week that Iran's uranium stockpile was now 12 times larger than it was permitted to be under the nuclear accord that Trump pulled us out of. But here's the thing, we pulled out of it. The deal was supposed to be, we do certain things, we give certain things, and in return, they don't increase the stockpile as well as a number of other things. And we have the ability to go in and actually watch for it and make sure that they're abiding by it now. Now, they kept saying, the Republicans, in the lead up to pulling out of that, that somehow the deal itself was making the threat of them getting nuclear weapons higher than not having the deal. That is the case they made to the American people. So they pulled us out of it. And now their uranium stockpile is 12 times higher than it was before. So their case apparently has been made against them, because it turns out when we're not in the deal, they can produce a lot more uranium than they could when we were. And by the way, they get to do that because we don't have a deal with them anymore. Right. We pulled out of it, they didn't. We broke it, they didn't. This is what happens when you do that. When you break down diplomacy with another country, you don't have the influence to get to say what they do or don't do. And I understand that this is not actually going to come as a shock to the Trump administration. They're not actually surprised to find out that Iran produced more uranium. The case could easily be made that that is the outcome they wanted when they demonized the deal and when they pulled out of it. That they knew that unrestrained by a deal that the US would no longer abide by, Iran would do what Iran is gonna do, which is pursue a nuclear weapon. And why wouldn't they? They're terrified that the US is gonna bomb them at any moment. How do you stop that? In theory, by having a nuclear weapon. So you could say, if you give a little bit of credit to rationality for the Trump administration, that they are setting up the exact situation they want, which is not an Iran that doesn't have nuclear weapons, but an Iran that acts in ways that justifies a military intervention against them, which is what Trump is apparently spending his last couple of months as president looking to accomplish. And it has one other, I apologize for going on, but it has one other knock-on effect, which is, in theory, if you were trying to illegally hold onto power as president, having some sort of military conflict going on isn't necessarily incompatible with that. He could try to make the case to his followers that, of course, you can't force Trump out of office. We're at war with Iran. And I know that that sounds crazy, and I hope that in hindsight it is, but we already almost went to war back when Trump was secure in his presidency and thought that he would remain president for years to come. We no longer have that security. We no longer have that stability. We have a wild, petulant child who's terrified of being dragged out of his house in a couple of months. And if he wants to start dropping bombs, he can. He apparently was dissuaded from it last week. But remember, he's also knocking off the leadership of the Department of Defense on a daily basis, putting into place loyalists who are far less likely to tell him not to do what he wants to do with regards to Iran.
And it doesn't sound far off at all, John. I mean, everything you just said makes complete and total sense. Actually, if you want me to be honest, it's kind of brilliant of a plan for Trump, if that's what he's trying to enact. And I think he's gone on record before. I don't know if this is alleged, but him saying that if he doesn't win the presidency, he's going to tank the economy. I think he said that more than once over the last 4 years.
Well, and I think he said that if he loses, the economy would tank.
Okay. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a brilliant plan to try to stay in office if you really strip it away and look at it from like an extreme train of thought, John. But back to my point though, is it smart? No. Who at the end of the day, who is it going to impact? American citizens, America. So petulant, childlike, everything you've used to describe 45 is on the money, because only a person with those type of attributes in their personality would go down that route and try to enact that type of plan to stay in power. Whatever reason. And also, by the way, he's also a narcissist. Just want to put that out there too.
Yeah. And by the way, look, you know, I was very critical, obviously, of Obama's foreign policy in a number of different areas. This wasn't one of them, because that was a better way to get what we wanted, which was a non-nuclear Iran and relative stability in the region, was pursuing diplomacy. Trump has a different strategy. Joe Biden is going to do, when he becomes president, God only knows how many things that are going to infuriate us when it comes to foreign policy. But if he can resume that deal and once again clear out their stockpile, as was done the last time, that would put us in a much better position that Donald Trump seems to be gearing up for. We've known for a long time Dr. Fauci is out, replaced by Scott Atlas as the doctor who has Donald Trump's ear. A doctor who, of course, has no training in fighting a viral infection, which is appropriate because he has no intention to. That'll be demonstrated quite well in this clip. I want you to take a look at this, where Scott Atlas is talking about how exactly people should approach Thanksgiving gatherings in a time of a COVID pandemic.
And this kind of isolation is one of the unspoken tragedies of the elderly, who are now being told, don't see your family at Thanksgiving. For many people, this is their final Thanksgiving, believe it or not. What are we doing here? I think we have to have a policy, which I have been advocating, which is a whole person, whole health policy. It's not about just stopping cases of COVID. We have to talk about the damage of the policy itself.
Okay, so as he points out, this will be some people's last Thanksgiving. And you know, if he has anything to say about it, that number will be as high as possible. People who won't experience another Thanksgiving might not even make it to the new year if they follow his strategy, which is don't listen to any of this advice. Pack as many people in as possible around the Thanksgiving dinner table. You know, maybe lick a roll and pass it to your cousin and just see what happens. It'll be fun, Jason. Holidays, pretending that the pandemic doesn't exist.
Hey, much like the rest of the country during the holidays shuts down, COVID takes a break as well. Just kidding. Rise up. What does that even mean? You need to rise up. Rise up and do what? End up on a ventilator? No, I'll pass on that. I think, look, he does have a point. For some, it is sad, John, that people that are elderly or people who have been in the hospital or they're away from their families due to COVID aren't able to be together for the holidays. That's a grim reality for a lot of Americans, and it sucks. 2020 has shown us that things can really suck, right? However, on the other side of the coin is, I would rather, and I'm sure a lot of Americans would rather have FaceTime or do whatever. There's ways to still be connected with loved ones in this time without physically being there. And I'm sure those people would love to have their loved ones still alive to possibly be around for the new year and to be around for another Thanksgiving. So him recommending that's irresponsible. And I'm glad, or at least I would hope, that people are like smart enough and have been proselytized enough to know how to protect themselves from COVID, that they can sit this one out at least for this year, at least for this time, or find a better way to celebrate the holidays that keeps everyone safe, that keeps everyone healthy. And you said this guy has Trump's ear, of course, and Trump's whole thing was he wanted to reopen the economy weeks before it was even safe to do that. I'm sure somewhere in his mind he still thinks that COVID is something that we can all manage, you know, irresponsibly, even though we know that that's not the case. So I mean, again, it doesn't make any sense, but people are smart enough to know that, hey, let's sit this one out for 2020 and we'll revisit Thanksgiving in 2021.
I hope so. And you know, some people certainly will be. I mean, we got a super chat earlier in the show from a viewer said that they were not going to be doing an in-person thing. And look, I would love to Thanksgiving or Christmas. You know, I used to do Thanksgiving near Kansas City with my friend every year. We'd go and we'd have days of just gorging. And then on Christmas, I'd go and I'd spend it with my mom, and it was great to actually see family. But I don't want to kill my family. Right. I also don't want to be killed by them. But that is what's going to happen. Many people will heed the advice of experts, but many, many people will not. Millions and millions of people are going to have in-person, packed, no socially distancing, no mask Thanksgivings. And the only question is, how many people get sick as a result? How many people die? How many people die knowing what's going to happen, knowing that we only have to wait a little bit longer to get the vaccine, but they're going to do it. And as difficult in a vacuum as it might be to deal with this isolation and to deal with the lockdowns, which they keep talking about lockdowns, there's effectively like no lockdowns anyway or anywhere. You also have all these people who they just watch TV and all day it's people they respect, rich people in suits telling them that it's perfectly safe. And Fox News brings on this guy who's like technically a doctor, but in a way that has literally nothing to do with this pandemic. And they present him as an expert. And they are doing such a disservice to their audience. Pointing out that Fox is trying to kill their audience seems kind of pointless and cliche at this point, but they're still doing it month after month. And that wasn't Laura Ingraham who's introing Scott Atlas. That wasn't, you know, Sean Hannity. That was, I believe, Martha McCollum, right? That's one of their straight news people that brings on this guy who was only brought into the administration to be given a position where he seems to be an authority because of his appearances on Fox News. It's that weird chicken and the egg thing. And a guy who's been brought in to pretend that the whole body thing, which is just don't worry about the pandemic, the herd immunity thing, that's what he's here to do. He's here to put a doctor's face on surrender to the pandemic. And Donald Trump is all in. He has long surrendered. They're just trying to get as many of Trump's followers to surrender as well. And unfortunately, it is going to wreak havoc on people's health, and many will die as a result of it.
Well, you know what? To that point, though, John, one, Fox News bringing someone on like this is irresponsible. But two, as we earlier in the pandemic, when we talked about COVID, you know, it's up to us, though. We cannot allow ourselves to be victims of this. We have to know better. If people, you can't feel bad for people who are watching these outlets, John, and doing and don't have the wherewithal or the smarts or the mental faculties themselves to make a decision that's educated for themselves. Like, I'm not going to go and watch, I'm in Rachel Maddow and her say, oh, you know, it's okay to go and hang out in South Beach, Miami around a bunch of people when there's a pandemic. No, Rachel, it's not. Because I'm smart enough to know that, hey, okay, you're one source, but let me take things further. And if people aren't smart enough to do the work themselves, and that's also on them as well. I mean, yeah, sure, Fox News is being irresponsible. I think now, especially as late as we are in the game in 2020 in regards to COVID, what, 8-7 months into this? Where have you been? Where have you been if you don't know better by now? And when you know better, you do better. So obviously you do not want to do better. So it's also on these people as well. Again, Thanksgiving is this American, is as American as football. It's the food, the togetherness, the community. I get it, isolation sucks, but being alive is a hell of a lot better than not.
And being alive and having been responsible is a lot better than being alive, but knowing that you gave one of your relatives COVID and they died as a result. I mean, that's sort of the unspoken thing. Many people will be lucky enough to not know that they were responsible for other people dying in this pandemic, but some will know. They'll know that they're the person that gave it to them, and they'll have to live with the knowledge that because of either best case scenario, their ignorance, they ended up spreading it to someone. And you know, some of it, again, this pandemic was always going to kill a good number of people. Some of it couldn't be avoided, but much of this is totally optional. These are not people that, because the government decided that we're not giving aid to people, they're forced to go work. That is one thing. This is people going on TV to tell people, yeah, go to a party, go have fun, go needlessly expose yourself to this thing. Anyway, okay, we are running very low on time, and I would like to get to these last two stories. So we're gonna roll right on into this next one. With Joe Biden being the president-elect and Donald Trump clearly having committed a number of crimes throughout his presidency, you combine those things in the equation would seem to lead to Donald Trump facing legal jeopardy from the federal government. State stuff is a different matter, but from the federal government. And I have been saying, even though it's very unpopular for a number of weeks now, that I have no expectation that they will do literally anything about any of that, because that's not generally how the Democratic Party works. Certainly the part of the Democratic Party that Joe Biden comes from. I just don't see it happening. And what do you know? Reporting today from NBC News, President-elect Joe Biden has privately told advisors that he doesn't want his presidency to be consumed by investigations of his predecessor, according to five people familiar with the discussions, despite pressure from some Democrats who want inquiries into Donald Trump. Biden apparently has raised concerns that investigations would further divide a country he's trying to unite and risk making every day of his presidency about Trump. This would include investigations of Trump's taxes or of challenging any orders Trump may issue granting immunity to members of his staff, like pardons before he leaves office. One advisor said Biden had made clear that he wants to just, quote, move on. Obviously. I'm not surprised by this. And look, Biden, what he wants in this is not the be all end all. Obviously, the government is complex and it's not all ruled directly by Joe Biden. But Jason, it's not looking like you're going to have, you know, a DOJ chanting, lock him up as they pursue Donald Trump starting January 20th.
No, he's not. They're not, John. And I, again, you're not surprised by Joe Biden wanting this. I'm not surprised by President-elect Joe Biden wanting to move on, because one, this year has been a lot. Joe running for office has been a lot, I'm sure. Even from the debates, his whole demeanor has been about what we can do in the future. How can we rebuild? He wants to make America great again.
Oh my God.
But
he does, though, kind of like he's flawed in his approach in a few ways, but
it's the truth, though. He wants to just take one step forward and let's just get to work. There's no need to dwell on the past. There's no need to again continue with this House of Cards drama episode that is President Trump. Let's just get him out. It's been a lot for all of us, and let's just go forward and try to clean up whatever mess we can, because 4 years, president after president after president hasn't been able to rebuild our country. People, the Americans, and even people outside of our country think that it's a president's job to come in and just make everything perfect, like it's Candyland, it's all gonna be beautiful. And you can't do that in one term, you can't do that in two terms. And Joe feels like, look, I have my work cut out for me, so let me just get started on that and do what I can to make good on the promises I've made to the American people. And that's smart. That's him being progressive. That's him being present. That's him being just mature about the presidency. It's not about the reality show of the presidency, of a overhaul, if you will, and let me start the engine on that overhaul.
It was relatively easy for me over the past few weeks to predict, as many I'm sure did, that he would want to move on. I mean, it's exactly what Barack Obama did in regards to the George W. Bush administration, which there was a lot that you could have investigated there, but they didn't. They're looking forward, they're not looking back. As to what he should do, I might disagree with you to some extent. I am very torn on it, because Donald Trump has clearly committed a lot of crimes. The obstruction of justice that was revealed in the Mueller report is so obvious there. The tax crimes, all sorts of stuff like that. But when Biden says that it would consume his presidency, that's not a terrible point. Now, we could disagree about whether it should, whether it's worth it, but it probably would. I am really torn. It's not like usually I come on air and I'm like, here is what should definitely happen. I think to some extent, I think that if he doesn't pursue it, or if he doesn't put pressure on the DOJ, first of all, the DOJ could still investigate things anyway. They're supposed to be independent of the presidency, and I would love to get back to that. But even if they don't, you do still have the ongoing state level investigations, which I like that those are more insulated from the power of the White House, whether the White House is controlled by a Democrat or a Republican. And so I think that you will still get some of those investigations. First of all, the Republicans are never going to accept it, even if it has nothing to do with Joe Biden. But if Joe Biden was in charge of it, or his AG was in charge of it, they would definitely not accept it at all. I think everyone watching this knows that.
Right. And also, it's because we've been, as you said, you mentioned the many crimes of Trump, the many alleged crimes, say alleged just for safety for our lawyers. But the American public has been like the butt of Trump's, they've been the butt of the joke by Trump for the last 4 years. And so, yeah, you want to see him get, like, you want to see them throw the book at him. You want to see him get put in a slammer. But Joe Biden thinks, I think, I guarantee he's probably thinking about his legacy as well, right? Because Joe Biden's also up there in age. And knows that this may be, I hate to be so nebulous and ominous, but this may be his last hurrah in politics, right? So he probably feels like, look, the work is way more important than the pettiness of what has been the last 4 years. And you say you're torn, I put myself in Joe Biden's shoes. I would want the same thing too. It's been a lot for us. Division of the country is what he also alluded to and talked about, and that we are very divided. And to continue to drag Trump and the essence of 45 into his presidency is not going to do anyone any good. Who cares now? The damage is done. Move forward and let's rebuild and get people back to work. Have a vaccine for COVID. Try to return to some kind of normalcy, if that's even doable. And just move forward. I mean, just like I said, keep it pushing. Keep it moving.
I will say, while this might be sort of the approach I would advocate for, I would do it acknowledging that there are very real concerns about the consequences of that and what it signals. So if Joe Biden is looking forward and not looking back on this, does that signal that he's not going to prioritize reversing Trump's executive orders? That is he going to prioritize reversing the massive decrease in the corporate tax rate? These other things that Trump did, sure, you don't want to make your presidency all about the Trump presidency, but there was a lot of damage done. And are we just not investigating Trump? Are we also not investigating ICE abuses and Border Patrol and all of the other excesses of the Trump era? Are we turning a blind eye to all of that? Because that is definitely not something I'm ready to sign on to. So we don't know for sure. We don't know, but that would be part of my concern. And also the precedent that it's setting, or the continued precedent that it continues to set, which is if you get in as president and you break the law, as long as the next president's a Democrat, they're definitely not going to investigate you. I don't like that as a precedent. It's not Joe Biden that's setting that. That has been the way things work for a very long time. But I don't like the idea that, you know, the next Republican president, whether it's Ted Cruz or Tom Cotton or Tucker Carlson, why do they all have names that sound exactly the same? That they'll know I can get away with anything I want. Because, you know, when AOC becomes president after God knows who, they're not going to investigate because they never do. So this is why I'm torn. There are very real consequences and hypothetical consequences that this strategy could lead one to be worried about.
And no, John, those are absolutely valid and salient points. And I'm glad you touched on that, because you're very right. I would imagine that Joe would pick and choose his battles, right? Because you mentioned a whole myriad of different infractions and different wrongdoings by Trump and the Trump administration. Yes, but okay, so which ones do we pick? We can't, you know, he's not the Avengers. We can't go and just try to take on Thanos. He has to go and figure out, okay, which are the most egregious ones? They're all egregious, but again, it's crappy to say, but okay, well, this one, you know, ICE abuse, that's not as bad as this. You know, it's like what it's this huge undertaking that Joe Biden and his administration and Kamala and Vice President-elect Harris will have to decide, okay, well, you know, we gotta let one go in order to, you know, we got to cut off our nose to spite our face. And I think that's what it's at, because there's so many egregious infractions that where do you begin? Where do you start? How do you value one or devalue one over the other?
One quick answer would be Congress definitely needs to take up some of this. Like, they should have been looking into, like, remember we found out all about this tax stuff, and everybody seems to have forgotten that over the past few weeks. It wasn't that long ago that we found out of all this. It doesn't all have to be on Joe Biden or on the DOJ or on the FBI or God knows what. The states can do some of it, but Congress should be investigating a lot of this too. And I hope that they don't ignore, especially the stuff that's not as directly tied to Donald Trump. Like the hysterectomies and all of that, the child separation. Congress could be having hearings on all of this, and they should. Now, we have one other quick story. It's an extremely unfortunate one, but I want to make sure that this sort of thing isn't ignored. Got a bit of incredibly worrying casual racism by a police officer to talk about. This is about a part-time deputy at the Oakland County Sheriff's Office in Michigan. has apparently now been fired after depicting Vice President-elect Kamala Harris as a watermelon in a racist Halloween Facebook post. You're seeing below the person's identity is being protected. I guess I understand that. It bothers me still, but you're seeing there the image. They had the pumpkins, and then for Kamala Harris, they had to have a watermelon. And since this has come out, this person who had been a part-time employee working as a deputy has been fired. But think about this, that's on Facebook. That wasn't like they just thought it or something. They were so proud of this. A cop was so proud of this racist meme that they posted it for all of their friends and family members to see. It just boggles my mind, Jason.
I'm not surprised, John. Racism in 2020 has stopped surprising me because people are so blatant with it. It used to be overt and very sinister and it was very covert, I apologize. Now people are just openly calling people the N-word, openly putting up pictures of themselves in blackface. They don't care. And racism was so blatant to me also by the amount of red I saw on the map during the election. And not saying that everyone reported was racist, but we know that the base, they have tendencies to lean that way. So to your point, I'm not shocked by this. And as a black man who's experienced racism my whole life, you become, there's a malaise to it. The older you get, it's like, well, yeah, okay, cool, right.
Yeah.
And it was a watermelon. I could see if because you know the stereotype is all black people like fried chicken, grape Kool-Aid, and watermelon, which I do absolutely love fried chicken and watermelon. However, I do know some black people who don't. Okay.
Yes.
Al Sharpton does not eat watermelon because he says it's too sugary, and he's very black. So this person had to intentionally put this up there, and I wish they shouldn't protect people's identity. Because if you are that ballsy to post something like that on a social media platform, obviously that's gonna show who you are, then the media should be like, this is the person who did it. There are people on social media now that are, which is really cool. They're asked, these citizens are sleuthing these racist people and exposing them there where they work, all their social medias, everything. It's incredible. It's incredible. These, again, watchdogs are not having it either. So to your point, I'm not surprised by this, but I'm glad that he was dealt with. Good for the removal.
I believe from some of the context, I believe it was actually a woman. It doesn't really change the story at all, but I believe it was a woman.
They were dealt with, just to cover the whole.
Exactly. There you go. I'm a bit torn on the identifying, just because obviously there are crazy people in America. And in theory, there could be death threats or whatever. I would be a little bit less worried in this case because the sorts of people who do those death threats and are wild and crazy are the people putting these memes up, not the people criticizing these memes generally. So I think that they would probably be okay. They'll probably get hired at a different police station and get a raise. But the reason that I wanted to include this story is this is like, what you just said is totally true about how casual and explicit and just totally accepted the racism has become. But at the same time, all of the representatives of that movement say that it doesn't exist and that America is still not a racist country at all. That you could just have a cop who just casually shares publicly racist memes. And this is like a sort of a story. I found it was a local news story had it. I found it, I think, on Raw Story. But this is what some cops think. And think about all the interactions that cop has had with people in his or her, their community.
Mm-hmm.
But we're supposed to, and none of it exists. It's all made up. Black Lives Matter is lying about it. They're exaggerating. You know, people on Fox News who make millions of dollars a year will say that this sort of stuff doesn't exist. And it's just casual. It's just out there. And it's apparently comfortable and generally encouraged. That person, was that the first racist meme they ever shared? Sort of doubted at this point, as old as they were. I don't know, the whole thing just makes me sick.
Me too, John. And here's the thing about racist to me. I hate to use the word respect because it's like I'm giving some kind of validity to a racist, but I would respect a racist person more if they came out and flat out said, and I've seen this on TYT as well, that I am racist. I don't like you because you're black. Fine, because you as an adult, I may not agree with your viewpoints. I may not agree with what you believe in. However, you have the option to believe whatever you want. And you being a racist, not you, of course, hypothetically, this person, doesn't affect my life. It's when they lie about it. It's when they yeah. get more, they're more covert about it, or they deny that it exists. There's books and movies and deep and copious documentation of racism in our country for people to act like it doesn't exist even now. Generations and generations of racism and racist activity has trickled down into millennials and Gen Z, and they've found more clever ways to be racist. The microaggressions have become macroaggressions with, I would say, with a more the ingenuity people have cultivated and erected to be racist is like I can't even fathom it. So yes, racism is real, and all these people on Fox News and people who are not of color, not of marginalized groups, feel that. Oh well, how? But where? Well, you are not black. You are not of. You are not the person who's being victimized by racism. So of course you don't see it. But if you stop and listen to someone who does move to the world in those marginalized groups, you will realize that it's very real, and the stories that they tell are very real. They're incredibly real. They're viscerally real.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry to end the show on a down note, but as always, always glad to have you on. Until you next show up on the Damage Report, where can people follow your work?
John, they can follow my work on Instagram at Jason Carter Official, also on Twitter at JJC Forever. And as always, Sean, always a pleasure to talk everything with you guys. Thank you. Damage Report, TYT Army, thanks for having me. It's always good to be on.
Thank you. Be well.
You too, man.
Going back at least a half a century, at this point out from the presidential election, the transition would be on, and various arms of the government would be coordinating with the new team being accrued by the president-elect. And especially in a time of crisis, work would be done to prepare the president-elect to assume office in the next couple of months. For the first time though, that's not happening, and that is very consequential. And joining us now to break down some of the ripple effects that might have on our country and on our government is the founder of ZS Strategies and former vice president of GLAAD, Zeke Stokes. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much for having me, John. How are you?
Yeah, living in America, so doing as well as I can. But glad to have you here. And certainly, you know, from my point of view, the election went well. What do you think of the last couple of weeks? I mean, we're not even, like, we have a president-elect technically, but some important people aren't really treating it as if that's the case.
I think we should be shocked, but probably not surprised. Donald Trump telegraphed to us that this is how he was going to handle a defeat. And so, you know, I think the Biden campaign at the time, the Biden transition team now, probably began preparing for an eventuality that we haven't seen in this country before. And I think, you know, there's a couple of things. First of all, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have an amazing team around them. A lot of people who served in the Obama administration in national security positions and healthcare positions and others. So I know they're getting very good advice, and he's going to be prepared on day one to be president. But a lot of resources are being withheld because the GSA and the administration are not figuratively or literally turning over the keys to the Biden team. And so you can't just walk in with 250,000 people dead and catch up on day one when it comes to how this vaccine is going to be distributed, where we are with getting 20 million people back to work who are unemployed right now. So they're doing a disservice to the ability for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to hit the ground running. But I think the Biden team is doing everything they can to mitigate that.
Yeah. I mean, they're certainly staffing up. You know, every day we're hearing about more of the people that are going to be serving in their administration. But we also know that they're not getting intelligence briefings, not the ones that they're supposed to be getting in the position that they're in. They're apparently not able to coordinate with the White House coronavirus like task force in any substantive way. These seem like pretty big barriers that are currently being held up.
It's a really big deal. They ought to be embedded in this coronavirus task force already, getting briefings, the same briefings that the administration is getting, in direct touch with Pfizer and Moderna and the other companies that they're going to have to coordinate with on January 20th to begin getting this vaccine out to Americans and making it available so that we can stop this pandemic. They're doing real damage to our ability to fight this, and it's going to delay our ability to get this vaccine to the people who need need it the most, particularly our healthcare workers, frontline workers, and others. It's not a debilitating delay in terms of getting the work done, but it does matter, and it is important, and it is, of course, unprecedented.
Now, based on what you've been seeing, as we've seen the evolving legal strategy, such as it is of the Trump administration, right now, the situation that Biden and Harris and the rest are in, waiting for access to these literal resources in terms of money, but also information and access to officials, are you sort of just assuming that this is not really going to be rectified until inauguration? Or do you feel like at some point Donald Trump is actually going to lower those barriers?
Well, there's a couple of key dates out in the states as votes are certified. There's, of course, the date the Electoral College meets to cast its official votes. It's unclear whether any of those will have any bearing on how Donald Trump and his allies treat this defeat. But one way or the other, Joe Biden is going to become president of the United States on January 20th. And as they've indicated, if federal marshals have to remove Donald Trump from the White House, that's what we'll do. I don't think he's ultimately going to go out that way. I think we see signals already of him sort of distancing himself, inexplicably from these lawsuits, others beginning to distance themselves a little bit. But these Republicans don't want to take any chances when it comes to making his base mad. They're worried about their next primaries. They're worried about this runoff in Georgia. They're worried about Senate control. And so everybody's playing it really close to the vest and are only going to move when Donald Trump gives them the signal to move.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this Georgia runoff, because obviously, like, when we're trying to predict what a Biden administration is going to be like, the composition of the Senate is going to be pretty important, and we don't yet know. So we have these two runoffs that are coming, and they're not that far away. What would you like to see, either state Democrats, Biden, his surrogates? What should the strategy be to raise the odds of succeeding in one or both of those runoffs?
Well, there's a really important fact that we all need to remember when it comes to these southern states. I'm from South Carolina, so I know firsthand. It's not a welcome thing for Georgia voters when they see a lot of outside influence coming into a state to influence and nationalize a race. I think we saw that a little bit with what happened with Jamie Harrison running against Lindsey Graham over in South Carolina. I think that was an element of that. I think we have to be very careful as people who want to flip the Senate to make sure that this is a race for Georgians, about Georgian issues. But I think at the same time, we need to get Georgians, Georgia Democrats, and those fighting these two races, the resources they need to be competitive and to win. I'm very confident in the team and the organization that Stacey Abrams has put together with Fair Fight and others on the ground down there. And I think our job should be to stay out, keep our distance, but help them get the resources they need to win. And I think they can do it.
You know, I wonder, all else being equal, whether the fact that Georgia has flipped to blue, you know, assuming votes aren't thrown out and all of that, it has finally flipped and it is blue. And the Democrats, in theory, could be motivated to want to provide for their newly elected president-elect a Senate that will actually let him pass literally anything. If that can outweigh or overpower sort of Trumpism's last stand, the idea that this is what they can do. And so far, Trump is playing along, saying that the Republicans need to be elected to stop Biden from being an effective president. What do you think about those two countervailing forces?
Well, I think Trump is really, Donald Trump, the person, is only interested in what benefits him. So as long as what's happening on the ground in Georgia helps his ego, helps move his profile forward post-presidency, he's going to play ball. The second he doesn't see any value in that, he's going to move on. And that may be in a week, or it may be a few days before the election. It may not happen at all. What these candidates on the Republican side have really tried to do is link themselves to Donald Trump and that base that he very successfully turned out on November 3rd. And so I think a lot of this push and pull and this game that's being played is all about keeping that base, ginned up and motivated to turn out again on November 3rd, on January 5th, because if they don't, there's no way Republicans will win these two Senate races. When you look at the numbers, Democrats obviously solidly behind these two candidates, independents largely breaking for these candidates. The math is in our favor going into this race, as long as we can turn out our voters.
And what did you think, in terms of things that could potentially, shake up the race? In theory, we could have had a real debate that at least between John Ossoff and Perdue is not going to happen, with Perdue saying that he's just not going to show up. Apparently, there are plans to have an empty podium in place. What do you think about that decision?
Well, if I were David Perdue, I wouldn't show up either. John Ossoff cleaned his clock during that debate. And then we saw him pull out of the final debate just before the election on November 3rd so he could appear with Donald Trump at a rally to get the base riled up to turn out. So, you know, I don't expect that to change. I think Georgians can see through that. And, you know, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue have not just bad political records to defend going into January 5th. They've got some serious criminal allegations against them that have to be addressed. And that I think Georgians are taking into consideration when it comes to who they want to represent them in the US Senate going forward.
Yeah. And you know, we sort of acknowledge there that it's this big thing that, Georgia has flipped and Biden was successful in, you know, turning Arizona blue as well. I know that we don't have the final numbers. There are still literally millions of votes to be cast, and we're gonna spend the next year or two trying to learn as much as we can from what happened in this election. But what are some of the lessons that so far you're taking away? Things that you think it's important that people don't miss about the way the election played out?
One of the things I've been really disappointed to see is people sort of pointing fingers inside the progressive space at, you know, what caused some people to win and others to lose, and, you know, progressives versus centrists and all of that. I think what we saw is that a progressive message is a winning message. And I think that's what got Joe Biden over the top by turning out progressives in big cities across the country where these votes really mattered, like Philadelphia and Atlanta and other places. So I don't buy into this narrative that we have to be in the center to win. I think it's actually the opposite. The more we can excite progressives in our base, the better we do. And I think that's the only reason we were able to offset this very large turnout of Trump's base on the other side. If we had been playing to the middle and not talking about things that progressives care about for the last year and a half, Joe Biden would not be the president-elect today. And so I think that's the big lesson we need to take away. This is, don't move to the middle and try to become Republican light, you know, vanilla candidates running that don't look much different than the Republicans. Be who we are, run as progressives, be proud of that, stand up for it. Don't fight on their turf, fight on our turf. And we saw Democrats who did that win. And I think Joe Biden fits that category.
I think great advice, you know, as we do the early prep for the midterms. Definitely, I couldn't agree more. Zeke Stokes, as always, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.